He stole America's heart as the rocker fan favorite on last season of American Idol. And now we have Dalton Rapatoni in studio talking life, touring, and his debut album. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Here I am. What a classic.
Yes.
If I could sing, I would.
Oh my God. Legendary.
Kelly, we love you.
What a legend.
All right, guys. What is up, After Buzzers? I am your host, Morgan Ouellette. You can find me on Twitter at Morgan Ouellette. And welcome to AfterBuzz TV's The Concert Experience. I'm so excited. I am a huge American Idol fan. So all you out there, I'm fangirling with you. I have Dalton Rapatoni with me. Dalton, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I super appreciate it.
Yeah, I know you're super busy. You are wrapping up a tour right now, right?
Yes.
So you just performed in LA, if I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
You have five more dates.
Yes.
Are you, what is touring like? Are you just absolutely exhausted?
Well, I mean, it depends on the day, really, because with a lot of what we're doing, I have a band with me called The House on Cliff, and they open for me, and they're also my backing band.
Okay.
So anytime that I'm, like, even remotely tired, I'm like, well, these guys have to play, like, 2 hours every night, and mm-hmm. I only have to play one, so I don't know if I have the right to be very tired. But the schedule is, it can be a little bit grueling, depending on, like, the drive and everything, but overall, I'm 21. I'm young. I can handle it.
Yeah, you're
might
not.
As well do it
you're
now.
Not too old yet. You've got a long life ahead of you.
Hopefully.
But okay, so you're on tour right now, and it's in anticipation for your new debut album, correct?
Right.
So that album drops September 22nd,
yes.
If I'm right, and it's called Nobody's Home. So tell us a little bit about that.
I'm stoked you know all that, because you have no idea how many interviews I've gone in.
Oh, I can only imagine how many people have asked you this.
Like, do you have an EP coming out anytime soon? And I'm like, yeah, sort of. No, but the album's called Nobody's Home, and it's a full-length album,
mm-hmm.
Which that was tough to convince everyone that that was a good idea. But no, it's kind of just a look at where I... A lot of it's about the experience mm-hmm. on American Idol and the stuff that kind of happened behind the scenes with, you know, love, life, all of that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is the first time that I've actually done a solo album. So it's the first time I've actually gotten to, like, say what I wanted mm-hmm. to say, which is really cool and also terrifying, because if it sucks, it's completely my fault.
Right.
I can't blame it on the other members of the band.
This is true.
Which I was used to. Before. Also, I just realized it's the buzz. That's why these are bees,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, see, after buzz,
I get it.
The bumblebee. So it makes sense.
I get it.
So it's not like we're just trying to terrify people who have... Oh, we got a round of applause.
Thanks.
Okay, so we get that. I just kind of put that together too. But I mean, I should have known this, and I'm the host, but thank you for that. So, okay, you've done albums with bands. This is your first one on your own. Do you feel such a pressure since it's just you?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot more of a pressure. I mean, obviously, like, I have a team
mm-hmm.
and, you know, I have a couple producers that I worked with that are amazing, Matt Nevesky and Joey Milligan. And, like, it's definitely nice to... Oh, I thought that was, like, a drum roll. But it was just, like, air.
We're waiting for this.
I was, like... No, it is a lot more pressure because, mm-hmm. like, publicly, if it sucks, no one really gives you the benefit of the doubt if, like, it's just your name on it. But I hope it doesn't suck. I hope we don't have to deal with that.
I don't think it's going to suck. I have high hopes. I listened to the single, Signs.
Oh, did you?
I really liked it.
Thank you.
So, and I'm not a big music person. Like, I listen to the radio,
mm-hmm.
but I really liked it.
Whoa.
Here we go. So your single on American Idol was Strike a Match, and now you have Signs. So what's kind of the difference between the Idol single and this? You had a lot more freedom with this, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I actually didn't have a hand in writing the Idol single. So fun fact, when you get that far, I hope I'm not, like, blowing the lid off of anything.
No.
But
do tell.
If you get that far,
mm-hmm.
if the top three of my season got to do originals.
Okay.
And they had already prepared all of them for us. So when I made it into the top three, the night after that show where it was revealed that I made it through, they were like, okay, here's your song. You're going to record this.
Oh.
I'm like, is there...
a point at which I could, like, you know, maybe discuss some of the lyrics. And they're like, yeah, but you got to record it tomorrow. And I was like, oh, okay. And so.
Oh, so yeah, Idol Secret. Interesting. I always thought that y'all would kind of have your own say in that. So.
Well, I mean, we kind of had a say in how. Oh, I'm shaking the table. And how the song, like, musically sounded. Mm-hmm. Because they based the instrumentation off of, like, what you had been doing for the rest of this season.
Okay.
But, yeah, when it comes to, like, the song and everything, it's really just, you know, they write the song for you in that context. And then you just go and you know, perform it and record it.
So with that being said, did you end up liking the song that they gave you? Or were you like,
I liked, I liked most of it. I think the chorus was dope. There was a couple, like, it seemed as though, it was weird because the verse lyrics referenced songs that I had done on the show, mm-hmm. which I personally wouldn't do. Like, it referenced, like, Numb, and I had done Numb on the show, and it said, "Are we just dancing in the dark?" And I did Dancing in the Dark on the show. And there was a couple things like that that I was like, all right, maybe I would take, if I had more time, I would, like, take this out. But at the end of the day, it was fine. It sounded like, you know, something that I would do probably, like, musically. Mm-hmm. It's just lyrically I didn't connect to it because I didn't write it.
Right. So you do write all your own songs.
Yes.
So with your new album, are the majority of the songs that you wrote? Who helped you with that? I know in an interview you said
Matt Nevesky
helped you a lot. So
yeah. So there are a lot of songs that were just me. Mm-hmm. But any of the songs that weren't just me, I was still involved
okay.
in. I was, like, in the writing room with them. It's funny because I actually kind of wrote a full album before that was all me. And we looked at it and we were like, we don't have all of the songs yet. We have to, like, go find more. And I was like, all right, let me just go back into my hole and I'll write, like, 10 more.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, no, we don't think you should go back into your hole. We think you should...
your hole.
I do have a Dalton hole. And it's just, like, a thing I dug in my backyard to just sit in and write songs. That's not true.
Oh, I was like, for a second, I was very concerned for you.
I know, I have
you.
A really monotone voice, so no one can tell when I'm joking or not.
I was like, somebody help him. He sits in a hole and writes his songs.
Yeah,
but hey, you do what you gotta do.
But my team was like, you should get different perspectives in your music so that it doesn't all sound the same. And so I came out here and I wrote with a bunch of people. We wrote probably like 15 or 16 songs and came back with 5 that were pretty good. Most of which were actually written with my best friend in the world, Will J, who was in a band with me way back in the day. He's an amazing writer. He's got his own stuff going on right now. But 4 of the songs on the record are actually collaborations with he and I.
Oh.
And so, yeah, coming out here was actually probably a really good idea for the writing process.
So I've never written a song, so I can only imagine how hard it is. What's the process like? Do you just get inspired? Does it just happen to you overnight? Is it a long process?
It really depends. Like, if I'm, like, a lot of the times, my saddest songs come when I'm, like, on my bathroom floor at, like, 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, like, am crying, and then, like, the sobs make, like, a melody, and then I'm like, oh, I should write that down. And then that's where some of those come from. But with the writing sessions out here, it was actually kind of weird because I had never written with anyone before this. And it was like, hi, nice to meet you. Here are all of my fears. This is everything that's wrong with me. Here's everything that is, like, horrible that has happened in my life. Nice to meet you. And it was like, that part was really weird. But in a couple instances, it worked out really well. The second single, Heaven, was actually one of those situations where it was just like, hi, nice to meet you. Here's the song. Bye.
Have fun. Like, so you really, I mean, you obviously have to trust your team you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling them your whole life story. And
right.
So I'm assuming you're all very close now after doing all this.
Well, and that's one of the things that was really beneficial for me is for some reason I lack the part of my brain that feels shame.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always been pretty open with like even the dirtier bits of my story. So that wasn't the hard part. The hard part was like getting all of these like other writers to like work with me after hearing like all of the terrible things that, you know, I have
experience and, you know, things like that. Not that, like, my life has been particularly terrible, but it is a little bit weird when a person comes up to you and is like, hi, how's it going? I have mental problems and this is what... Blah, 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 blah. Like, I can't blame them.
Run with it, right.
Yeah, I can't blame them for being weirded out by me, but, you know,
but sometimes with you, I mean, there's so much passion behind that. I feel like having that kind of story creates better songs because you have, you know, more experience, yeah. right?
I mean, depending on the people that you're working with, because I have bipolar disorder, and people ask, like, does it help writing? And I always say, like, in the really high highs and the really low lows, it helps. But in all, like, the in-betweens, it's not as helpful because it's just, like, I am not motivated to do anything or I am off the rails right now. I can't do anything. I can't focus. So, you know, it's beneficial to an extent in those rare instances. But, you know, it's just...
Well, I do want to touch on that real quick. So you do have bipolar disorder, and you came out with it kind of on the show. What made you want to talk about that on the show? Was that the first, I think, I could be wrong, that was kind of the first time you publicly went kind of more so with that?
Maybe. I mean, if I did say it publicly before that, I don't think
it wasn't on like a major network. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, part of my decision to do it was, well, partly because I had gone further on the show than I thought and I ran out of things to talk about. and they wanted, it was like the week that they did all the, like, the really emotional stories. And I guess that was kind of mine. But, you know, it wasn't a hard decision to talk about it because one of my favorite bands of all time was is Blue October. And their singer, Justin Furstenfeld, has bipolar disorder. And him talking about it helped me a lot. And so I figured maybe talking about it would help someone else. I did think that the portrayal of it on the show was a bit too simplistic.
Okay.
Because everyone goes with the whole, like, oh, bipolar disorder, bi means two. It's a prefix, and then it's two distinct sides. It's not multiple personality disorder. You're the same person the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just different varying levels of endorphins in your brain. And so it's easier for people to digest the whole, like, multiple personalities narrative.
Right.
But it's a little bit more complex than that. And if I could go back and change anything about my season, it would be to further explain, like, what it's actually like and that it isn't two distinct sides of someone. It's the same person underneath it all, but it's just different magnitudes of the person's personality.
Right. So regardless of that, so you came out with that on the show. Did you have a lot of fans from then reach out to you? I can only imagine so many young kids watch American Idol.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of people do, you know, have that struggle. Did you get a lot of feedback saying, you know, like, this really helped me?
I did, yeah. There was a lot of, like, really touching things that people would send me over, like, Twitter or at shows and things like that. And, you know, once that stuff started happening, because I was insecure about it at first. Like, when I did that bit, not bit, a segment.
Right.
Bit sounds like a comedy routine. When I did that segment, I was like, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Like, maybe that's going to reflect poorly upon me because people still don't really understand it. And people are going to be like, oh, he's bipolar, not voting for him. Weirdo. But when people started coming out with it, I like, in saying that it helped them, I was like, you know, even if I do go home because of it, it was probably worth it.
Right.
For the
I mean, well,
kids.
That's something that makes you who you are. Mm-hmm. So if anything, as a viewer, I would appreciate that because, I mean, that's what makes you, you know, that's where it's, I guess, gotten you to be where you are. So we'll touch on, I guess, American Idol, why we're on that topic, because I have 1,001 questions for you. Well, first of all, I want to get your thoughts. So you were on season 15, the last, you know, farewell season.
Right.
Or so they say.
Right.
So, and now they've come out, it's now season 16. So what are your thoughts on, you know, American Idol being back?
I like it for the opportunities that it gives musicians. I think it's a really great tool for certain people. There's, like, a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of saltiness because it was nice to say I was on the last season.
Right, and then it's like they rip that from you.
And saying, like, I was on the last season on Fox isn't as cool.
Right.
But, I mean, all in all, it's worth it for, like, the good that it's going to do a lot of musicians. So
are you going to watch?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I'll be there, right there with you. And then what are your thoughts on Katy Perry being one of the judges?
I don't know. Wasn't she a judge for a little bit a few seasons ago? Like season 13, she was a guest judge or something?
I want to say she might have been a guest judge. I don't know if she was like a permanent one, but yeah. It'll be interesting. I feel like she's gone through this music change, so it'll be interesting how she is with being a judge. But
yeah, I think it's going to depend on the people that she's judging with. And we don't know who that is yet.
If you had to pick two other judges to be with Katy Perry, who would you pick?
Gordon Ramsay.
Because he knows so much about music.
Well, I mean, you need an angry British guy.
Yeah, that's true. You don't have Simon, so yeah. Gordon.
Yeah, Gordon would be great. Also because, well, no, he's on Fox. That would have worked if he was on, because his shows are on Fox, right? So it would have worked back then. But still, dream judge, Gordon Ramsay, and I would want one more angry British guy, so Piers Morgan.
I like the idea. Angry British people.
I know, but I love that. Like, I think, okay, maybe not Piers Morgan. Someone who knows, like, a lot about music, probably.
But I feel like that was, like, was Harry British?
No, he's not
British, no.
But he knew a lot about music.
He was very, very intelligent.
He was, like, my favorite judge to get feedback from. Because I always would say, like, J-Lo would know that something was wrong. And Keith would say what was wrong. And then Harry would say how to fix it. And so it was always my favorite to get feedback from Harry because, like, moving forward, his information helps you a lot. But J-Lo was always really sweet to me. So
how's J-Lo? She's my favorite.
Yeah.
She's fantastic. But, okay, let's rewind to beginning of Idol. Mm-hmm. So you were in a band before.
Yes.
So before Idol, it was IM5 and Fly Away Hero. Mm-hmm. What made you want to try out for Idol, kind of go on your own? I mean, you had a band. Y'all seemed successful. Mm-hmm. What was kind of the thought process of, you know what, I'm going to go on my own, I'm going to try Idol?
Right. So Fly Away Hero had just gotten finished with our, it was technically our third EP, but first one since, reforming. And... you know, we made it, and it was fun, and I liked it, and I wanted to tour it, but a couple of the band members didn't want to. Mm-hmm. And so I was, like, kind of at a weird impasse where I didn't know what to do with my career, and so I met up with my buddies in the band False Puppet, who are now in a band called Arlington now, and they were going on Warped Tour that year. This is 2015, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to, like, be a roadie for this tour because I just want to be, I want to get out, and I want to like suffer for some reason. And it was a lot of really, really hard work. It was some of the worst fun I've ever had. But at that point, my dad called and he was like, hey, American Idol's doing auditions in Dallas. Do you want to fly back for it? And at this point, I had been on Warped Tour for like, 3 weeks. And I had gotten, like, first-degree burns on my face from, like, falling asleep on a sidewalk that was, like, asphalt. And it was, like...
We're going to go back to that story
later. Yeah, it was a lot. And then I just was, like, sweating like, a pig. And I was, like, are they going to have air conditioning? And he was, like...
inside.
And he was, like, yes. And I was, like, okay, I'll go. And so that was, like, the real catalyst into,
going. So you tried out Dallas, American Idol. So when you walked in there... I remember watching your audition, and I was like, he's so good. Like, did you think you were going to get on the show?
Oh, God, no. I mean, I went into producer auditions in Dallas, and then the judge auditions were in Little Rock.
Okay.
And I figured, like, going on Idol might make it a little bit easier to, like, find a new band.
Oh.
And that was kind of, like, my entire purpose initially for going on the show. But after that, I made it, and I was like, oh, God, now I have to, like, do this. Like, this is a thing now. This isn't just a performance that I'm doing once on television. This is, like, a whole thing, and I have to deal with it.
Right.
But, it was a great time. I was with a guy the other day doing an interview, and he called it type 2 fun. Like, the kind of fun that you have, and it's, like, miserable at the time.
But, looking back on it, you're like, I'm great. So happy I did that.
That's kind of what Idol was. It was a lot of type 2 fun.
Was it stressful? I'm assuming it's extremely high stress.
Yeah, and it's, like, really hard to convey that because it's, like, people only see you for 2 hours every week. But the schedules are, like... 5 to midnight every day. And, depending on the round that you're in, you have to, like, learn a new song every day. And it's it's a lot of really, really hard work, but it's worth it in the end.
What was the overall, out of your whole Idol experience, the best moment and then kind of the most stressful moment? So the highest and the lowest.
The highest moment was I did Bird Set Free by Sia. And that whole week was amazing because we got to meet mm-hmm. Sia and everything, and I talked to her about bipolar disorder and things like that. But I was performing Bird Set Free, and it was like kind of one of those shot in the dark things because it wasn't the most like popular song that we were allowed to choose from. Like there were songs like Chandelier mm-hmm. and I don't know if The Greatest had been out, but like all of our super popular songs. And I was like looking at the lyrics to all of them. And I had never heard Bird Set Free before, but I read the lyrics and I was like, I connect to these lyrics better than any of them. And I actually learned the lyrics before I ever listened to the song. Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to choose your song the night after the previous round.
Okay.
And I chose the song without listening to it, which was dumb probably, but it worked
fine.
Out.
YOLO.
Yeah, it worked out fine. But I chose it because I connected with the lyrics so much. Because I was never like lauded as like one of the better singers on the show. And that's one of the lines of the song is I don't care if I sing off key, which I do a lot. But it kind of like explained my entire philosophy in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and I sang it, and my mom was in the crowd that night, which was bad for me because she was crying.
Oh, I would have like, lost
looked,
it.
I did. I like looked out of the corner of my eye and I saw my mom sobbing and I was like,
I mean, I think I would cry just like rewatching that.
Yeah. I did a couple times. but it was, that was probably like one of the most cathartic moments mm-hmm. just because it was, I got to, be with my mom and it was like all of that stress just like gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then probably the most stressful moment was Hollywood Week sucks.
And I can imagine.
I think probably the most stressful moment of the whole season was during Hollywood Week. It was like 3 a.m. and it was like it was the night after group night where you have to choose one of like 20 songs
mm-hmm.
and you have to learn it that night. And it was like 3 a.m. and I was like, okay, I'm going to bed now. I've learned my song. I'm going to bed. And then I get a call from a producer who is a dear friend of mine. His name's Grady. Awesome dude. But I hated him at this moment because he called me at like 4 a.m. and was like, hey, you forgot to like sign the papers to finalize your song, so you have to come down. I was like, but I have to wake up right. at 5 a.m. Why? Yeah. And he was like, sorry, dude. And so I had to like do all that. And so I did that round on like 30 minutes of sleep. And so that was fun.
Well, you would have never known, so.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that.
Wouldn't have guessed that. But okay, so you made it to the final three on Idol, mm-hmm. which congrats on that. That's amazing. Do you have any, I guess, how am I going to phrase this? Do you ever wish that you would have won? Do you think it's better you got third so you have more freedom? You didn't have to.
Right.
I'm assuming when you win, you kind of are under American Idol's arms.
I didn't want to win.
Right.
It's funny because like a lot of people go into it knowing that they don't want to win.
Okay.
That's the thing. There is like a tiny bit of me that's like, oh, maybe it would be cool to have like that title, like as the American Idol. But people, still refer to alumni as that, and that's fine. I don't think it was worth it to have that title, but to also be like tied down to the label because everyone that worked on American Idol was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But once you win the show, you don't work with those people anymore. You work with a label, most of whom there you've never met. And okay. So that's like the unknown quantity about it. Like if after the show you got to work with the people from American Idol and they were your label, I'd be like, dope. I love all these people. This is amazing. But you don't. They kind of just like, hey, you win. Mm-hmm. Now you're signed to this label that you don't know anything about. And so that's the thing that kind of pushed me over the edge of not really wanting to win and just like wanting to get my goal was third place just because third place gets on every episode and doesn't have to have a contract because even second place has a contract.
Really? Mm-hmm. See, I just thought first place did.
Mm-mm.
So you really got the best of both worlds.
Oh, yeah. I have no idea how I pulled that off.
You made it to the finale.
I did.
And now you have freedom to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So you're the real winner in this situation.
I don't know about that, but I mean, it worked out best case scenario for me.
Right. So. And then So were you upset? I know usually American Idol does their big, you know, after the season tour, and season 15 they didn't. So what was your initial thoughts on that? Were you like, I'm gypped. Like, this isn't fair. Like, where's my tour?
I was so excited that they weren't really doing the tour. Yeah, because a lot of people do that tour, and it's like, it just kind of like puts a halt on their post-Idol career afterwards. Because in the time that you're doing the tour, you could be making an album, or you could be like doing press and things like that. And if you're doing the tour, it's just like you're stuck on this bus for at least like 6 months. Mm-hmm. And it's cool because you get to hang out with all your friends, because like genuinely all of the people from the top 10 were great. And I wish that I got to do the tour just to hang out with them more. But I'm glad for us in the sense that we all got to start working on our careers immediately after the show. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of Idol contestants don't get to do that. And, you know, the reason why they didn't do it is because normally it's to promote the next season of Idol.
Oh, okay.
And there was no next season at the time. So, yeah, it was I thought it was a blessing in disguise.
Yeah. So do you keep in contact with anyone from the cast still?
Mm-hmm.
Who's your BFF?
My BFF? I talk to Avalon a lot. I talk to Amit, who is top 51, I believe.
Okay.
Tristan, Trent, Mackenzie. I pretty much talk to all of the top 10.
So it's like now you have your little Idol family forever.
Yeah, and it was so weird. It was such a surreal experience going, because on the finale they did like this massive thing where they took all of like the Idol alum that have like made a name for themselves after the show. And we all got in all white, which I was upset about because white's not my color, as you can all see. But I did, like, they put us all in a room with, like, all of these people who are, like, genuinely famous. And, you know, talking to them, like, a lot of them said, like, yeah, dude, you're, like, alumni now. Like, you're one of us. And I'm like, no.
Like, no, I'm not worthy.
No, I'm a tiny little ant. And it's crazy to be in that situation as, like, I mean, I'm a kid still, and, mm-hmm. like, it was just so crazy, like, becoming a part of that world, because, like, Jordan Sparks visited me in the hospital one time, and it was, like, yeah, because I had a sinus infection, mm-hmm. and I was at the set doctor's actual office, and shout out to Dr. Nasiri, what's up, Mike?
Hey.
But Jordan was there, and she just popped by and say hi, and I'm like, you
know my name? I would have fainted.
Oh, my God. I almost did, but that might have also been partly because of the sickness.
Either or.
But yeah, it's weird to like think you're a part of that world.
Yeah, you're part of Kelly Clarkson and Carrie Underwood's family.
Yeah, super weird.
Which is...
I never talked to Carrie.
She's my favorite. She's my absolute favorite. Yeah,
she was one of mine too. But she was like, every time she was on set, she was like, had security like escorting her around everywhere. And I don't blame her.
Yeah, she made it big. Out of everyone on Idol who's won or, you know, made a name for themselves, mm-hmm. do you have one that even before you went on the show, you're like, that's my favorite. I look up to you so much.
Yeah, and he actually became probably one of my, like, the closest people I got with on the show. Chris Daughtry was actually the first physical CD I ever owned was his first record after the show. Daughtry. And he and I became like pretty good pals like while we were doing the show and everything. I ran into his wife at Walgreens.
Hey, small world.
And he texted me like, heard you saw my wife. And I'm like, yeah, she's very nice and pretty.
She's a nice woman.
Yeah. And it was funny because after I got kicked off at third place, the first text I got was from Chris. And it was like, look at it on the bright side, buddy. At least you made it further than me. And I was like, all right. But
that's awesome.
That was probably one of the coolest texts I've ever gotten in my entire life.
And you performed with him. Top 24? I could be wrong. I think it was that.
Yeah.
So that was just like performing at the buddy then.
Yeah. It was super
probably
dope.
So fun.
Yeah, we did Higher Ground. And we both, because we were originally told that we were doing the Stevie Wonder version. And then we were like, we both separately were like, no, we're doing the Red Hot Chili Peppers version. And then we got together and we were like, did you say to do the Red Hot Chili Peppers version? And we were both like, yeah, dope. And so, yeah, it was really, really fun working with him. He's a great dude.
Interesting. Well, he was one of my favorites too. And then last kind of Idol-related question, because I am curious. So they kind of pegged you as the rocker.
Mm-hmm.
That was your, you know, character, I guess.
Right.
So Did you feel any type of pressure to perform that way? And is your album different than how you were, you know, portrayed on Idol?
Yeah, for sure. That's one of the things that is like a, I guess, a symptom of just television in mm-hmm. general. Like, you kind of have to fit into a non-nuanced sort of character. Like, the best part about Trent, I think, was the fact that he was like both country and R&B. But the further you go on the show, you kind of have to narrow that down to get to, like, the most people. And that kind of happened to me, too. I never thought of myself as a rock dude, even though I, like, covered mostly rock songs. But I would try to do them in, like, a non-rock kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't, like, see myself as a rock kid, even though, like, I wear skinny jeans and Doc Martens and leather jackets. But I... it was definitely something that I struggled with kind of towards the end. I was like, I don't really want people to see me that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I did Radioactive, initially the plan was to do like a gospel kind of like church organ kind of thing. That ended up falling apart and we just did something more of the original version, which is why it was probably my worst week. But I was very aware that they were painting me in that light. And I wanted to do my best to get myself out of that, which is another reason why I didn't want to sign with the label, is because I knew that they were going to be like, okay, Dalton's a rock kid, let's make a rock album.
Okay.
Which I didn't want to do. And the album that I have now is not a rock album. It's kind of just, it's kind of like alternative pop, but like darker.
Okay.
I guess. Which, like, the first single is Signs, and that's probably the happiest song on the record. But, yeah, for me, I was always very aware that I was going to be perceived as the rock kid, and lo and behold, I was, even though that's not really who I am. But
you weren't too rocker-ish.
Yeah.
Kind of,
but
sort
it's
of.
Like, you go after dudes like James Durbin, who is like a full-on rock dude, and it's like people expect you to be the James Durbin of that season, which I was not equipped to be. But... it was James Durbin's dope, by the way. We have the same hat.
Disclaimer.
We have the same hat guy now.
Hat guy?
Yeah. He gave me the number of his hat guy.
Do you get custom hats?
Yeah.
I want a custom
hat.
He's
dope. I'll see if I can find the number.
I pull off hats, but...
but, no, you definitely, like, when you get categorized as, like, the rock dude, suddenly you're competing with Adam Lambert and James Durbin and Chris Daughtry, which I really didn't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to stay away from it the best I can, but, like, it's television.
I think you made, you know, a name for yourself. And
I did,
like,
my best.
Right, you know? And you're doing well because, I mean, look at you now.
Thank you very much.
But, okay, let's talk about your album because I have a few more questions with that. What was the biggest inspiration behind that? I mean, let's talk, I guess, first the name, Nobody's Home. Mm-hmm. Where did that come from? I think I was reading something about a poem, yeah. Emily Dickinson.
Yeah, so there's an Emily Dickinson poem that goes, I'm nobody, who are you nobody too? It's the first stanza. And my mom used to read it to me. And it always really connected with me because I've been, like, performing and doing music since before I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been something that's helped keep me grounded. And, like, I have a tattoo of nobody on my wrist. And that was the first tattoo I got. I got it the day I turned 18. Just kind of remind you, like, no matter how big you get or no matter how large someone else seems, everyone's nobody in the end. You know, we're all just floating around on this little rock until we're dead. And I know it sounds depressing.
It's a little morbid.
No, but I find it to be pretty optimistic.
I understand.
It puts you on the same, you know, playing field as everyone else.
Right.
And so
we're all equal.
Yeah. If you live your life thinking that, you're never afraid of anything. And that whole thing, like, kind of turned from, you know, the people who follow me call themselves nobodies. And, When we decided a name for the album, I thought Nobody's Home would be good because it has several meanings of, like, there is nobody home, or nobody, i.e. me, is home. And, like, it could be interpreted in a few different ways, which I thought was kind of dope.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So you have to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. So how many songs, kind of, you've released two singles,
yes.
Correct? What else can we expect from the other songs?
We've got another single coming out.
Okay.
I don't know the date yet.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, it's Back from the Moon.
Okay.
And I like that one a lot because there's a Phil Collins-y chorus. Mm-hmm. Anywhom. but yeah, I think a lot of the songs are based, I mean, all of the songs are based on experience. It's funny because a lot of the songs like switch kind of between different mindsets, because I wrote half the album before Idol and half of it after. And there was a point in time where I was in like a pretty bad relationship, and I wrote a song called Would You Like That? And it was kind of about that time, and it's probably my favorite song on the record because it's not like publicly talked about that, like when you are in an abusive relationship, and if abuse is going both ways, which it often does, you never think that you're the bad guy. You think that you're doing the right thing, even though to any outsider you are the bad guy. And I think it's important to acknowledge that, like, even in a situation where there is like abuse, the other person's perspective, no one's the villain in their own story. And it kind of, a lot of the times, takes some stepping back to see that maybe you were the bad guy in that. And that one is really important to me. But a lot of the other songs are like really happy too, because there was this girl that I was fawning over during Idol, and she wouldn't talk to me. And
ouch.
Yeah, it's fine. She.
it's okay. It's We're okay over now. It now.
But I wrote a song called Somewhere in America, and that one is kind of about like that experience of like being on the show and kind of like, I did a few songs to like kind of try to give her hints that I was like trying to get her attention.
Oh my God, I would be so flattered.
Right? But she didn't realize that I was talking to her until like after the show. but she was like, no, I didn't think that was about me at all. Even though it like obviously was. But there were like a couple songs that were hints. And so like that song is kind of about that, like trying to like,
hey, over here!
It's me, notice
me! I'm on television, I'm talking to you, hi!
Oh my gosh, well now that she knows, is she like tried to get back with you? I would be like, wow, oh my God, I have a song written about me.
There's like, we communicate again, which is nice.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So it didn't end in bad blood.
No.
Okay, well it's not like Taylor Swift and all her songs.
Right.
Which is good.
Yeah.
But okay, also, Matt from Blue October helped co-write all this. And he's one of your, I mean, Blue October is one of your favorite bands. How did y'all meet up? How did that connection kind of spark?
That's, so that seems was pretty. That was funny because when I was in a band called I Am Five, I started to like get a pretty decent like Twitter following, and my favorite band at the time was Blue October, and I started tweeting them, and then like the people who followed me would like tweet them, and I finally got their attention. And I went to a show at the House of Blues on Sunset, which isn't there anymore. And I was like, I like introduced myself to the band, and I was like, hey, what's up, how's it going? we kind of became friends from there. And then when I quit IM5 and went to reform my old band, Flyaway Hero, we were looking for producers, and we found out Matt from Blue October was a producer. And we were like, hey, you want to produce our album? And he was like, yeah, sure. But it's an EP. And so, yeah, he and I have been working together for a long, long time. And he's actually my manager now.
Oh.
It's
funny how things come full circle.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, I'm excited to hear the album. And we're going to wrap up soon. But I know you've done so many interviews. So I want, what's just one thing that you wish somebody has asked you, or a story you wish you would have told that...
Ooh.
That you want the fans to know? It can be something super random, but just something we can toss out there.
I might have talked about this before. I don't think I have, because it's mildly embarrassing.
Oh.
So there was this one time that I was like, I was on Warped Tour and I was practicing ollies like on a skateboard, and a friend of mine was like not believing me that I could do ollies. And I was totally doing ollies, by the way. And she was like, you know, I need proof. And I was like, okay. And the only one that had seen me do any ollies was Andy Biersack from Black Veil Brides, who was like sitting right there. And I was like, I had never talked to him before, but like, he's the only one that can like,
he knows.
He can validate that I've been doing ollies. And my friend was like a really big fan of Black Veil Brides. So I went up and I was like, hey, is there any way that like you could tell my friend that I do like sick ollies?
And he was like, what did he say back?
He looked so pissed. He was like, yeah, okay.
I'll tell her.
I was like,
boop, thanks. He was
like, hey, this is Andy, and Dalton does sick ass ollies. And I was like, thanks.
I need you to find this video.
It's on Twitter. Someone will find it.
Okay, somebody out there, somebody tweet me this video.
So embarrassing.
I really would like to see this.
There's like this moment. At the end, it was like, there's like a after he says it, I'm like, yes. And like, I'm sorry. I'm like, yes. And like the camera goes down because you could tell I'm doing this. Yes. It's so bad and embarrassing. But I don't think I'd given that like full story before.
Can you still do sick ollies?
No.
Ugh.
No, depressing. I cannot. Yeah.
It's a disappointment.
Not a skateboarder.
Oh.
Terrible.
Dang, you should bring it back. But, okay, anything you want to wrap up with? Tell the fans anything? Last words about the album?
Yeah, Nobody's Home comes out September 22nd. Please pre-order on iTunes and stay hydrated. Eat healthy.
You heard it. America, you heard it. Eat healthy. Stay hydrated. Thank you so much, guys, for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV's The Concert Experience. Thank you again, Dalton, for joining us.
Thank you.
And I'm your host, Morgan Ouellette. I will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Oh, man.
Oh, good.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening.